Imagine you're walking into this dimly lit, super crowded dive bar.
Okay, I can picture that.
Right. And at one table, someone is just screaming, like genuinely furious about the font choices on a video game menu.
Oh, wow. Just a totally normal Tuesday on the internet.
Exactly.
Huh?
But then, at the next table over, someone is casually quoting this massive geopolitical manifesto in German.
And I'm guessing the person listening is like nodding along while arguing about an anime character from 20 years ago.
You nailed it. There are no bouncers, there are no rules, and everyone is speaking this this dialect of internet slang that feels like it was designed specifically to keep you out.
Yeah, I mean, it is a totally insulated reality. And if you don't already speak the language, it just looks like complete unfiltered chaos.
It really does. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We're taking you on a digital archaeological dig into a very specific, highly chaotic corner of the internet.
Very dark corner, yeah.
Our source material today is a stack of excerpts from an anonymous image board thread dated April 2026. The thread is titled MCDD Mejidoshan Den.
Right. And our mission for you today is to figure out how this place actually functions. We're going to explore how these anonymous users blend some of the most hyper-analytical media critique you will ever read.
It's incredibly dense.
It is. They blend that with this incredibly toxic resentment toward the people who actually make the media.
And we're going to look at the end game of that culture, right? Because when you build an online community whose entire identity is based on rejecting mainstream thought, you inevitably create a vacuum.
Exactly. And we are going to see how that vacuum acts as an incubator for extreme, deeply contradictory political ideologies.
So we're pulling up a chair at this bizarre dive bar to, translate the shouting for you. Let's start with the conversation at the first table, video games.
Ah, yes, the video game critique.
Because the way this community talks about modern gaming, specifically indie games, is dripping with this very articulate venom. I mean, they seem to deeply loathe games that most critics universally praise.
They absolutely do. They have this visceral hatred for two concepts they call clutter slop and quasi-minimalism.
Clutter slop. That's quite a word.
Right. They look at the current landscape of indie games, like the games that win all the prestigious awards and get glowing reviews, and they view them as fundamentally dishonest.
Dishonest is such an interesting word for a video game. I was reading a critique in the thread where a user complains that millennial developers are, quote, pathologically terrified of committing to minimalism.
Oh, yeah. That post was fascinating.
They point out how a developer will make a retro-style game, but then they just can't help themselves. They have to inject unnecessary particle effects, sweeping cinematic camera angles, and what they call lore. And that's in all caps.
Yeah, that capitalization is key because it's completely sarcastic. They are identifying a trend where a game is no longer allowed to just be a mechanical experience. It has to carry this heavy emotional weight. A
Right.
user in the thread makes a really striking point. They say developers can't just make a simple game about a little guy exploring a cave system to fight a centipede anymore.
Which sounds like a great arcade game, honestly.
It does, but they say developers have to drape this cryptic purple prose story over the whole thing to make it feel, important. The community feels that these developers want the aesthetic of a minimalist, old school game, but they also desperately want the social prestige of having created a deep narrative masterpiece.
Right, and they blame Dark Souls for all of this. They actually call it the Dark Souls effect.
They do. Now, Dark Souls is famous for having incredible gameplay, but also telling its story very quietly through item descriptions and vague environmental clues rather than long cutscenes.
Which was totally masterful when it came out.
Exactly. But this thread argues that Dark Souls effectively ruined indie development because it taught untalented developers a cheap trick.
The trick being that if you make your story vague enough, people will just assume it's profound.
You got it. The users complain that developers are now making fundamentally simple games. They even compare them to classic titles like Shadow of the Colossus, but then ruining the purity of that gameplay.
By filling the world with ghosts who stand around delivering flowery, mournful speeches about how a kingdom fell because someone was sacrificed.
Yes, they view it as a completely cynical shortcut to critical acclaim.
And they really don't spare anyone. They bring up Look Outside, which was this massive, universally praised hit, and they completely write it off. They claim it's only considered mind-blowing because the baseline standard for games has dropped so low.
They are brutal.
But I want to try to make sense of this from the outside. It's almost like, okay, imagine you go to a restaurant, right?
Yeah, okay, I'm with you.
And you order a burger. And the chef brings out this incredibly complex, multi-tiered creation with truffle aioli and an artisanal brioche bun and, I don't know, edible gold leaf.
Sounds expensive.
Right. But when you bite into it, the meat itself is overcooked and dry. These users are just furious because they ordered a simple, perfectly cooked burger, and they feel like all this pretentious garnish is just there to hide the fact that the chef doesn't actually know how to grill a patty.
That is the perfect way to look at it. To them, the lore and the clutter slop interfaces are the truffle aioli. It's just a distraction.
A way to hide the bad mechanics.
Exactly. But it goes a step further than that. To this community, a poorly designed game isn't just a bad product. It represents a moral failing on the part of the developer.
Wow. A moral failing.
Yeah, it's perceived as a manipulative grab for indie darling status. And that need to attack the creator's character, not just their work, leads us directly into the truly bizarre way they consume other media. Which brings us to Woodstock.
Wait, Woodstock? Like the 1960s music festival? I saw that word all over the thread, but it made zero sense in context.
No, no, not the music festival. Woodstock is a code word they use for a webcomic called Homestuck.
Oh, okay, so why are they using a code word?
It's basically an evasion tactic. Homestuck was an absolutely massive, culturally dominant internet phenomenon in the early 2010s.
It was huge, yeah.
Right, but in this community, acknowledging that you still care about it is considered incredibly uncool. So they call it Woodstock to talk about it obsessively while pretending they are totally detached and above it all.
Well, the detachment is definitely an act, because the resentment they hold toward the comic's creator, Andrew Hussey, is intensely personal. I mean, they spell his name Hui with cent signs instead of S's to brand him as a greedy sellout.
It's very aggressive.
It is. And they bring up these incredibly specific ancient grievances. There's this whole tangent about a supposedly stolen $85,000 Kickstarter involving the controversial figures Zoe Quinn and Chuck Tingle.
Right. For context for you listening, that was a crowdfunded dating sim game spinoff that raised a lot of money, got tangled in endless internet controversies, and never actually materialized the way backers wanted.
Which, I mean, normal people might be annoyed about and just move on.
Exactly. But in this walled garden, that unfulfilled Kickstarter is treated like a blood debt. It is proof to them that the creator is fundamentally corrupt.
And that belief completely warps how they read the comic itself. We have to talk about the character assassination theory, because this honestly blew my mind.
Oh, the Rose Lalonde theory. Let's get into it.
Yeah, there is a character in this comic named Rose Lalonde.
She starts off in the story as a very articulate, somewhat pretentious, high standards teenager.
Right. And as the story progresses over the years, her character goes through some dark times. She struggles with alcohol. She makes bad decisions. She cheats in a relationship. You know, standard tragic character arc stuff.
Pretty typical for a long-running narrative.
Exactly. But the users in this thread don't see it as a narrative choice. They have built this massive psychological theory that the creator, Hussey, actively hated Rose because she represented a type of persnickety, demanding person that he supposedly despised in real life.
They argue that he couldn't stand that this type of person existed, so he deliberately ruined her character arc as an act of petty revenge against his own creation.
Okay, I have to stop and ask you about this.
Yeah.
Is there any merit to this as genuine literary analysis, like an author's subconscious biases bleeding into their work? Or is this just the absolute final boss of fan entitlement?
Definitely the final boss.
Because it feels like they didn't get the character arc they wanted. So instead of just saying, I didn't like the ending, they invent a massive conspiracy theory where the author sabotaged his own life's work just to spite them.
It is heavily, heavily the latter. But the mechanism behind it is really fascinating. It's about control.
Control over the narrative.
Control over the characters. These anonymous users feel a desperate psychological need to protect their idealized versions of these fictional characters from the messy, flawed, real-world humans who created them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if a character they love evolves in a way they find unappealing, they cannot accept that it's simply part of the story. It has to be, because the creator is a malicious hack who tainted something pure.
They want to rescue the character from the person who literally invented them.
Yes. And this psychological need to control and idealize fictional women doesn't stop at webcomics. It bleeds directly into their debates over anime, where they adopt a highly clinical, almost surgical approach to defining what makes a character appealing.
Clinical is the perfect word. The thread features this incredibly earnest, multi-paragraph debate about what makes high school anime girls endearing. And it didn't read like casual fans chatting. It read like a peer-reviewed psychology paper.
Oh, it's intensely academic for them. They spend a lot of time defining a concept they call gap power.
Right. Explain the mechanics of that to us. What is the gap in gap power?
The gap is the developmental space between lingering childishness and adult affectation. They're entirely fascinated by that transitionary state.
Okay, so like a teenager trying to act like a grown-up.
Basically. One user in the thread writes this long defense of the, quote, self-seriousness of teenagers. They talk about that very specific vulnerable mindset where a teenager thinks everything happening to them right now is going to last forever.
And that every minor inconvenience is the most important tragedy in the world.
Exactly.
It's incredible how articulate they are about why these tropes work. But it's almost like they're trying to catch a butterfly, right?
A butterfly? How so?
Well, instead of watching it fly around in nature, they just want to instantly kill it, pin it to a corkboard, and put it in a glass display case.
Yes.
They don't want these characters to grow up. They don't want them to change. And they absolutely do not want them to be reinterpreted by a mainstream audience.
That need to keep the display case sealed is exactly why they so aggressively attack mainstream fandoms. You see this when they talk about the classic anime Evangelion.
Right, they bring up the two main female characters, Rei and Asuka. For anyone who hasn't seen it, Rei is generally the quiet, detached one, and Asuka is the fiery, aggressive one.
And a lot of mainstream fans like to ship them, meaning they romantically pair the two characters together in fan fiction or online discussions.
And this thread is brutally hostile toward that. I mean, they use incredibly offensive slurs to describe fans who ship Rei and Asuka. They literally call them the row word.
Yeah, it's incredibly toxic. They argue that the dynamic between those two characters is actually based on noble contempt and that the fascination is entirely one-sided.
To this board, introducing messy, modern human romance into that dynamic destroys the purity of the characters.
Exactly. They prefer debates that are safely detached from mainstream emotion. For example, they'd rather argue over which 2000s cartoon character is the most goth, comparing Gaz from Invader Zim to Sam from Danny Phantom.
Because arguing about who is more goth is a safe analytical data point. It doesn't require any emotional vulnerability.
Precisely. They are building a walled garden to keep out anything they view as corrupted by the mainstream, whether that's a cluttered video game menu, a flawed webcomic creator, or a mainstream fanfiction trend.
It's all about keeping the outside world out.
Yes. But here is the critical turning point of this deep dive. When you build a walled garden that aggressively rejects all normal social discourse, you create a total vacuum.
And nature abhors a vacuum.
It really does. And on the internet, when you banish mainstream thought and social consequences, the vacuum doesn't stay empty. It gets filled by extreme chaotic political ideologies.
This is where our digital dive bar takes a very sharp, very dark turn. And I want to pause here to make something clear to you, the listener. Our goal as observers right now isn't to validate, endorse, or debunk these extreme political views.
Whether they lean left or right.
Exactly. We are strictly looking at them as artifacts we pulled from this thread to understand how an ecosystem like this uses politics as a weapon.
That analytical distance is crucial because the tonal whiplash in this thread is genuinely severe.
It really is. I mean, you'll be reading a completely coherent, somewhat pretentious conversation about a Nintendo game, and literally in the very next post, someone will casually drop a horrific anti-Semitic slur.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Or they'll make an offhand reference to Jews pervading the mind, and no one pushes back. It's just woven into the daily chatter like you're discussing the weather.
The bigotry is completely normalized, but what is truly baffling is how the thread operates as a blender for full-blown, deeply contradictory political manifestos that are happening simultaneously.
Let's lay out the manifestos, because the contrast is wild. First, we have a post from a user named Transgirl Connoisseur. And this user bizarrely signs off their post as RL, meaning Rose Lalonde, the fictional teenager from the webcomic we were just talking about.
So they are adopting the persona of a fictional high-standards webcomic character to deliver a sprawling geopolitical rant.
Yeah, and it is a dense, highly articulate tirade against the European populist right. This user attacks real-world political figures like Viktor Orban in Hungary and Marine Le Pen in France.
They go really deep into the geopolitics.
They do. They criticize these politicians for their alignment with Vladimir Putin and their obsession with Judeo-Christian values. They even point to the potential return of Donald Trump as a dangerous catalyst. And they end this rant by calling for a fully militarized, unified Europe to defeat this right-wing populist movement.
So you have a highly specific, left-leaning, pro-militarization stance aimed squarely at taking down the populist right.
Right.
But then you scroll down just a few posts.
And you hit a post written entirely in German. This user proudly declares themselves to be right-wing. They explicitly demand million-fold remigration, which is an extreme nationalist talking point about mass deportations.
Very extreme.
But then, in the exact same breath, they also support the militarization of Europe and arming Ukraine against Russia.
Which completely contradicts the typical right-wing populist platform in Europe, which is usually skeptical of arming Ukraine. And if that wasn't chaotic enough, you have yet another user randomly dropping into the thread to argue that Germany was actually a peaceful nation during World War II and only acted because it was provoked by external forces.
I mean, how does this ecosystem not tear itself apart? How can a left-leaning manifesto calling for the destruction of the right, a German nationalist demanding mass deportation, and a World War II revisionist all coexist in a thread that is ostensibly about indie video games and anime girls?
It's hard to wrap your head around.
Are they joking? Is it all just impenetrable layers of irony? Are we looking at untreated mental illness? Or is there a different currency at play here?
It all comes back to the vacuum we talked about. In a community where being mainstream or normal is considered the ultimate failure, the only currency that actually matters is taking the most extreme, shocking stance possible.
So it's a race to the bottom.
Exactly. To this subculture, politics isn't about real-world governance. It isn't about passing laws or having a coherent ideology. Politics is treated exactly like media critique. It's just more lore.
Wait, so to the person posting about World War II, saying something horrific about global conflict is fundamentally no different than saying Dark Souls ruined video games.
Yes. It's all just raw material used to prove that you are an outsider.
Wow.
The German nationalist post and the trans girl connoisseur manifesto exist peacefully in the same space because the community views them the exact same way, as highly complex, aggressive narratives designed to alienate normal people.
That makes a disturbing amount of sense.
When you strip away the real-world social consequences of speech, which total anonymity provides, and your entire group identity is based on being edgier and more cynical than the mainstream, the discourse inevitably radicalizes. Irony and sincerity completely collapse into each other.
So you literally can't tell if the person demanding remigration is a true believer or just an edgy troll trying to get a reaction.
Exactly. And the scary part is, within the ecosystem of that board, it doesn't actually matter. The function of the extreme statement isn't to govern the real world. Its function is simply to keep the walls of their garden as high as possible.
That is a lot to process. Let's zoom out and look at the whole picture of what we've excavated on this digital archaeological dig today.
Good idea.
We've seen the life cycle of an anonymous image board. We watched it start with highly articulate, deeply analytical critiques of game design. We saw how that hypercritical eye inevitably turns toward the creators themselves, leading to deep emotional investments in webcomics, curdling into this bitter, conspiracy-laden resentment.
And we unpack the psychological need driving it, right? The desperate desire to control media, to pin the butterfly in the display case, freezing characters in an idealized state to protect them from the flaws of reality.
Which, as we saw, requires building massive walls to keep out normal fans.
Yes. And finally, we saw the dark result of that isolation. When a community's core function is rejecting the mainstream, it becomes a chaotic dumping ground for extreme political radicalization, where real-world atrocities are debated like video game lore.
It really is a stark reminder to you, the listener, of how insidious internet echo chambers can be. You start by just wanting a place to talk about video game mechanics without dealing with annoying mainstream fans.
And then, before you know it,
you are sitting in a room where irony and sincerity are completely indistinguishable, and extreme political rhetoric is just casual background noise while you complain about a menu screen.
It raises a vital question, and it's something I want to leave you to ponder after we wrap up today.
Let's hear it.
When we spend all our time intensely deconstructing the media we consume, when we are constantly searching for the hidden flaws, the clutter slop, the creator's ulterior motives, and the subconscious biases behind every line of dialogue, do we risk losing our basic human ability to simply enjoy a story?
That's a great question.
Or worse, if we train our brains to analyze absolutely everything this way, do we eventually start viewing the entire real world as just another hostile narrative written by an enemy?
Wow. That is a heavy thought to take with you as we step back out of this digital dive bar and back into the daylight. Let's hope we can all still manage to just enjoy a good, simple burger without overthinking the garnish. That's all for today's deep dive. We'll see you next time.